welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, November 2nd, 2007. Boy, that October flew by quick, especially with all the goblins hanging out at the end. Tonight's guest is Shane Connor from 4IKU. I think I get that right. He's one of my suppliers. He's into nuclear stuff. He works with a lot of important government agencies, which we'll be talking about. And I've known him now for 2 or 3 years. Every time I call him up, he's got a real hot government story to talk about, so he'll share some of those with you. So from Texas, I want to introduce Shane Connor. Are you there, Shane?
I am, Dr. Bell. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's appreciated. Are you down there on your boat tonight?
I am, and got an early start on the weekend.
Oh, good. I don't blame you, you know. I need to come down there with you. We got to get teleportation working here.
There you go.
So anyhow, tell us a little bit about my listeners, because I'll probably have you on again, hopefully. My listeners don't know you, so tell us about your background, how you got into this, and a little bit about the company before we go into any of these wild stories and things and stuff we're going to talk about, you know?
Well, Fred, I started in law enforcement, supplies, public safety equipment. I was a dealer, distributor, manufacturer's rep, and a factory rep. And in the late 90s, I could see that we had some more concerns with the government agencies I was dealing with concerns of terrorism. And in the late 90s, I went ahead and started KI4U.com. And our first product was the potassium iodide. And we didn't realize how big we were in the industry until 9/11 happened. And we found the government calling us up for potassium iodide, and I told them, they asked us how much we had in inventory, and I told them we only had 300,000 doses left because we had all the hospitals and pharmacies buying it up then too. And they put me on hold, and they came back and they said, we're going to take it all. And I said, well, no, you're not, unless you can pay me for it right now. I can't wait, you know, 30, 60, 90 days before I get more ordered waiting for you to pay me.
Right.
And so they faxed me copies of 3 checks and the FedEx air bill, and they said all that would show up tomorrow if I'd let it go today. And I said, well, that's fair enough. I'll do that. And I said, well, how do you want it shipped? 3 day, 5 day, overnight? What's your pleasure? And they said, no, you don't understand. We've dispatched a Learjet to the Austin airport. We've already checked out your Gonzales Municipal Airport. It's not big enough. And we need to have you have it up there at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So we loaded our whole inventory, 660 pounds of potassium iodide tablets, into the back of the pickup truck and ran it up there. And sure enough, there's a Learjet from the Office of Emergency Preparedness. This was a forerunner to Homeland Security. And we came to find out later they had done this with the other KI suppliers too, and they were woefully underprepared for, you know, any concerns of nuclear threats. And it took a couple of years. You know, I had asked them later that day. I was looking for an excuse to call them up and ask them, and I called them up just to make sure it got there on time and thank them for the order, but really to ask them what the heck is going on.
Yeah, right.
And what the fella told me, he says, well, look, Shane, I can't tell you, but you're in the business. You figure it out. And it took a couple of years, but what we eventually found out was that they had another threat come up right on the heels of 9/11 that was supposed to be of a nuclear nature. Fortunately, it wasn't. But, you know, that was their concern, and we got to see how underprepared they were.
That's amazing. Yeah, it really is. So when did you and also the other thing, one thing we discussed too is dirty bombs. You told me once down there in Texas where you live that there's quite a bit of that material to make one of those disappearing every day.
No, there is. The NRC site used to show on there that we have on the average nuclear material. This is controlled material that is lost, stolen, misplaced, or disposed of illegally on the average of once every other day.
Wow.
And this has been going on for years and years and years. So, you know, if anybody has a mind to take some, you know, to take some of this stuff, and, you know, wrap it around a stick of dynamite, you just made a dirty bomb.
Yeah, exactly. Or even just take it and micronize it and stick it in an air conditioner in the in some big nightclub in Las Vegas or something.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not, you know, dirty bombs are a good panic device. You're not going to likely have as many casualties as you know, you might think, though, because most of the casualties will be from the explosion itself, which would have been there just from the explosive device, whether there was anything radioactive around it or not.
What if you shoved it in an air conditioner with no explosive device, just a big cup of dust? That would be pretty bad for a hotel, wouldn't it?
No, yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you could actually take, you know, like the cesium that we have in our calibrators at our lab. I mean, it's about the size of a pencil eraser, you know?
Right.
And, you know, if you stuck one of those and implanted the thing just inside of, on a door handle to a government building or, you know, some door that's used all the time with thousands of people grabbing that handle,
right,
you could have people, everybody losing their right or left hand there, you know, within 2 weeks. Everybody to grab the door handle. I mean, it's, you know, it's so easy if somebody wanted to be creative to hurt a lot of people. And then you'd have the whole country afraid to open a door, you know?
Yeah, that's something that terrorism has probably looked into, I'm sure, by now. And I know you work with the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI and a lot of these different government factions. So what are they saying about the threat of any kind of anything in nuclear? What are they saying about dirty bombs, you know, regular nuclear briefcase bomb? What's the scuttlebutt on the street right now with the government?
Well, we go to some of these conventions and with DOD and Homeland Security and these different agencies, and their attitude until recently, their attitude had been that they had two primary missions. Number one was interdiction, try to stop stuff at the border or find it here before it goes boom.
Yeah.
And number two, continuity of government or COG. For when they fail doing number one.
Right.
And our concern, and again, they're customers of ours, but I'm not afraid to tell people what's going on.
Well, yeah, you talk to them all the time. I know that for a fact. So.
But what they've left off is number three, which is continuity of the public. They're only thinking about trying to keep stuff from happening, which needs to be done, of course. But everybody knows, and we hear it from them all the time, something nuclear happening in this country, it is no longer a matter of if, but when. Now, the attitude change that we've seen here lately is borne out from the fact that they're telling us that if they had 10 times as much money and 10 more years, they still can't get things sealed up where they can guarantee we're not going to have something nuclear unleashed. So now they're starting to finally start thinking about what are we going to do when it happens. And Katrina helped with a lot of this. I mean, it really showed up, you know, how they, you know, they're just not ready for one, you know, if a major metropolitan area got affected. They can't handle the people. There's just no way to do it. There's a huge write-off of the population in those areas. And I should tell you, for Katrina, we have some personal experience there as well. We found out later, we supplied about 10% of all the MREs that went to the Katrina victims. Most of them in Mississippi is where it was shipped to.
Right.
And that came out of our little warehouse in Gonzales. That was 13 truckloads, and they would have bought 130 of them from us if we had them. They don't have this stuff in inventory. They get on the phone and start calling around for it. I'm sorry?
Once the event is over with, after the fact.
Yeah, I mean they're just not prepared for it. And on the nuclear side of the problem, what's going on is we have, for instance, in our warehouse, 8 months prior to 9/11, we bought out the Federal Depot in Fort Worth, Texas. and we bought 12 tractor-trailer truckloads in cleaning out their warehouse, 416 pallet loads of Geiger counters, survey meters, and dosimeters. This is all the civil defense equipment that when Clinton shut off the radiological arm of FEMA, a lot of this stuff was turned back in, and a lot of it ended up in that federal, in that warehouse, that federal depot.
Yeah, I guess you and I both were selling a lot of that stuff. Those old meters, they weren't strong enough to do what the nuclearks do, but they were great for an aftermath or something, right? Those yellow ones, right?
Yeah, and in other words, that's all the yellow equipment. It's civil defense equipment. It's for real nukes go off. And what we did at our place is we went ahead and I hired a fellow that's been in the industry since the early 60s. He started at Oak Ridge National Labs and went on to Los Alamos and Pantex, where they make the nukes up in the panhandle of Texas. Anyways, a lot of experience. And with his experience, I was able to open up a lab at our place, and we're certified to recalibrate and recertify all of this equipment and make it good again. We have the largest privately held inventory of civil defense equipment in the country, and we are the only private lab in the country that's certified to recalibrate and recertify all of this equipment and get it back out there. So now we have federal agencies and state agencies, even the Federal Reserve sends us their Geiger counter survey meters and dosimeters to recalibrate and recertify them every 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
So now the reason I bring this up is that what we're doing in our own little way is what we're complaining about that the federal government should be doing in a big way. And it's a real shame that, you know, this equipment's not out there, and that people aren't being trained up in civil defense like they used to be when we went to school.
Yeah, I was trained in that when I was a kid, yeah. They come
well, you remember,
yeah.
And see, the thing is, what had happened was that we've had half a century of the disarmament crowd ridiculing civil defense. Now, why did they do that? Well, they're ridiculing any alternative to their agenda, which was to get rid of the bomb.
Right.
Now that's all noble and everything, but that's kind of like trying to get rid of all the guns. The only people that'll have them is going to be the bad guys, you know?
Exactly, like Canada, for example. All the bad guys have them now.
Yeah, I mean, it's nutty. So, but what happened was we've had civil defense so ridiculed for so many years that the population here in America, they think, the general public thinks, that if anything nuclear happens, everybody's going to die, or it'll be so bad that you'll wish you had.
Right.
And in that environment, it's very hard for us to get through the good news that if, with a minimal of preparation and learning just some of the basics, there's a ton of good news awaiting people, because this stuff truly, really is survivable. And this is what we're trying to get through to people. And I'll give you a quick for instance. Everybody ridicules duck and cover.
Right.
But what people don't remember is we've seen the footage of an explosion either over water or over the desert, and you see the blast wave going out further and further and further. Well, the thing is, when the bright flash happens, if you'll immediately duck and cover, you're 80% more likely to have survived it than not doing that. And today, without the training of duck and cover to our school children and to people in office buildings and all across America, when the bright flash happens a couple miles away from them, everybody's going to have just enough time to run to the nearest window to see what it is to be shredded by the glass imploding inward.
Exactly.
Can you imagine all the kids in school? I mean, a flash brighter than the sun happens, you know, way a couple miles away, but they see this bright flash in the sky. Everybody runs to the window, and here comes the blast wave. And see, the blast wave can be delayed from the speed of light. You're looking at anywhere from a second to 30 seconds or more before the blast wave arrives.
Yeah.
And even if you're out in the open, if you will simply lay down, you are 8 times less likely to be hit by some shrapnel or to become shrapnel. Just by laying down, you're 8 times less likely to be hurt. So this is the stuff that we get frustrated with that is not being taught to the American people. And you know, everything's on the first responders and trying to outfit them and stuff. The greatest thing that the first responders could do and should push for is to have less victims. And they could have less victims if we trained up the general population and how to survive this stuff. It truly is survivable. And again, I said 80% fewer casualties from the blast if people were simply taught to duck and cover.
Yeah, now, why doesn't the government, I mean, all this talk of terrorism and everything, why doesn't the government initiate a few public programs like they had when you and I were kids? Have you ever talked to any of these guys in the government about that, like at Homeland Security or NSA or any of these other places where you go? What's the comment? Or do you ever bring this up? Why aren't they? Why do you have to do it at your company? Why are you the only one doing it? You know.
Well, there are some other good private groups that are also doing it. Physicians, Doctors for Disaster Preparedness, and Physicians for Civil Defense is one group, good group. Also, TACTA, the American Civil Defense Association. I mean, there are some private efforts going on. Now, we've talked to the politicians. We've had 3 occasions now in D.C. The most recent one was on 9/11 of this year.
Right.
And we talked to, in that one, we talked to Senator Specter, Congressman Dent, Senator Sessions, and a couple other ones. And we talked to them about the nuke alert. We talked to them about getting fallout shelters cranked up again. And we talked to them about turning civil defense on. Now, these guys are getting it. But what's happening is throughout all of FEMA, for instance,
right,
and throughout all of Department of Homeland Security, many of these people are in the same mindset as the general public, that it would be so, if a nuke went off, it would be so bad and so terrible and so overwhelming, we need to concentrate on interdiction first.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And now we are changing some minds and you know, that's what I want to see is civil defense. Now, one of these politicians, I won't say who, but you know, we talked about getting in there and talking to the Bush administration about it, and basically they told us we wouldn't get any we wouldn't get anywhere with them because it would be, quote, bad for business.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, because if we start training, that makes the Bush administration look like, oh, hey, you know, we're taking care of all this, you know, and therefore you don't need to worry about it, which is crap, you know. I mean, if anything, the Bush administration is almost an instigator, I think, in some of these situations. It's just to control us. Like, I think the world's going in a fascist state. America is, anyway, the way the public's being treated now by the Bush administration. That's my feeling.
Well, and you know, and if Katrina showed up anything, It's the understanding that even if the government had done everything perfectly right,
yeah,
they do not have the resources to support everybody.
That's
okay?
Yeah.
And if you're talking about a nuke in a city, and let's face it, if we have any kind of nuclear terrorism in any city, the odds of additional nukes in other cities goes way, way up.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, it's going to be absolutely overwhelming. So what we need to do as individuals is we need to get educated about this stuff, because this stuff really is survivable. And most people, when a nuke goes off, well, I'll give you an instance. Department of Homeland Security did a study. It was called National Planning Scenario Number 1. They did this in 2004. They took a look at a terrorist nuke going off in Washington, D.C. What would be the effects?
Right. It's like a briefcase bomb.
Pardon me?
Like a briefcase-sized nuke, right?
Yeah. Or let's say something no bigger than what could fit in a van.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay, I got it. Yeah.
So let's
head downtown and set it off.
Yeah, but let's say it would be like a suitcase nuke, if it was a Soviet-style thing, maybe something a little bit bigger, but we're talking a van size or smaller.
Okay.
So here's what they looked at. They looked at it going off on Pennsylvania Avenue halfway between the White House and the Congress building.
Right.
And they looked at a 10 kiloton bomb.
Whoa.
Now,
yeah,
now to give you an idea, a 10 kiloton bomb is about two-thirds the size of the Hiroshima bomb.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, yeah, that's big. Yeah.
So here's what they found out. They determined that you'd have 15,000 immediate deaths from it. This would be from the blast and the thermal flash and the instantaneous radiation that's given off right when the bomb goes off.
Right.
And 15,000 dead, and then they would have also from that initial blast, this is just the first few seconds,
right,
they would also have 15,000 casualties. Now, there's a part two to this, but I just want to mention at this point, what that represents is that well over 99% of the residents in the Washington, D.C. area would have had just witnessed and survived their first nuclear explosion.
Right.
Okay, now the point I'm making is, as horrific as those numbers are, the 15 and 30,000, as horrific as those numbers are, the odds of you being at ground zero are minimal.
Exactly.
Okay?
Right.
Okay, so here's the first thing everybody needs to realize. If any nukes go off anywhere, your biggest surprise right off the bat is going to be that you're still here. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, if you want to stay here, here's part two to this story, though. They also found that the fallout drifting downwind from this explosion would endanger and possibly fatally over 250,000 people as it drifted downwind.
Yeah,
okay?
A lot of people, yeah.
Now here's the good news. The good news, of course, is the blast itself. You're not likely to be there. But also, this plume or this radioactive fallout corridor that goes downwind is very skinny. In other words, if the wind is steady in one direction, 40 miles downwind, it's only going to be 4 miles wide. Okay?
Right.
This is a very thin pizza slice downwind. And what that's saying is you're looking at well over 95% of the people surrounding the blast area. They don't need to do anything. The fallout isn't coming to them. Okay?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And in other words, they don't have to be panicky if they know what's going on. And if it's, I would guess that this explosion would be a daylight explosion because the terrorists would like to get the most, PR from it. And the wind will shear the mushroom cloud off like an anvil, and it will point which way it's going.
Right.
Okay, I mean, if you have a big fire someplace, you have smoke blowing downwind.
Right.
This mushroom cloud will get a pointy head on it, and it will point which way it's going.
Right.
And if you know which way the wind normally blows and stuff, now let's say it's a 10-mile-per-hour wind, you're 40 miles downwind, this thing just happened, you can see it starting to rise up, you know it's coming straight at you, even if you are right in the middle of where that fallout's going to come, 40 miles downwind, okay?
Right.
At 10 miles per hour, it's going to be 4 hours before it gets to you. Do you think that you could walk 2 miles to your left or to your right of which way it's coming and get out from under it before it does?
Yeah, that's true.
If you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
If you know what to do.
Thing to do. Oh, exactly.
And it's even skinnier than 4 miles closer up. You got less time, but you got less distance to walk if you know what to do.
Exactly. And most people wouldn't just panic. They think it's everywhere,
Well, the problem's going to be that the people that need to get out of the area, they're not going to know what to do. If they did, they're not going to be able to get out very easily because all those other people have all hit the road in a panic going every which way, and the roads are all clogged up.
Right, exactly.
And we need to leave that corridor open so those people could take a left or a right. They need to move perpendicular. They don't want to go towards the blast, and they don't want to go directly away from it. They want to go perpendicular to it. They want to take a left or a right as they're facing it.
Yeah, and they can look at a tree blowing or something and just go in a perpendicular direction of which way the tree is blowing.
and simply get the heck out of there. Now, some people won't be able to get out in time, won't know what's going on, and if you know what to do beforehand, you can build a shelter in your home. If you got a basement, it's real easy. If you don't, it's a little bit harder. But you can actually shelter at home from the radioactive fallout. Now, it's easy to do, again, if you know what to do. I mean, you could have the thing all ready to go. And see, a lot of people, when you talk about a fallout shelter, you know, they're thinking, you know, $30,000, $50,000 fancy underground thing. You know, I mean, it's a virtual motorhome underground, you know?
Right.
And people don't understand that you can have a small place in a corner of a basement with enough shielding around it by the stuff that you already own, and it's going to be cramped and uncomfortable, but you don't have to stay there for 2 weeks or 2 months. Radioactive fallout is dangerous because it's giving off so much energy, which also means that it's losing energy very quickly.
What's the half-life or the danger time on this stuff anyway?
Well, what it averages out, there's like 200 different isotopes that are involved in radioactive fallout.
Right.
And what it works out to, it's called the 7-10 rule. Every sevenfold increase in time, the radioactive fallout is decreases down to a tenth of what it was initially. And here's what that means. 7 hours after the radioactive fallout, after the explosion, the radioactive fallout is only one-tenth as lethal as it was initially.
Right.
In 7 hours, it's already lost 90% of its strength. Okay.
Most people can survive 90 hours in their house if they got a you know. I guess I've seen like tape and cellophane and stuff like that, and all the windows sealed up. That's kind of how they do it, right?
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, and it really does make a big difference to keep the fallout on the outside. So then it has more distance to travel before it gets to you on the inside. And again, it's not the radioactive fallout that's the problem. It's the energy being released by it, and it's gamma rays, and they're like X-rays. They go right through stuff.
Okay, right. That's
so we you're right. We do want to keep it on the outside, so we want the house sealed up.
You still need to get down below the wet levels of the windows and stuff then, right?
Correct.
Or what?
If you have a basement, it's really good. If you don't, you want to be piling up mass, and mass is anything with weight,
yeah,
around you in a central part of the house. And here's something else that happens. In another sevenfold increase in time, in other words, 7 hours times another seven, in other words, 48 hours, 2 days,
yeah,
the radioactive fallout is now only 1/100th as strong as it was initially.
Yeah, and that's probably in Rannigan's is probably pretty low, I would imagine, from the bomb we're
using. What we're talking about here is that the majority of Americans downwind, these numbers don't hold quite as well if you're right on the cusp of the blast zone. Okay, in other words, if you're right there where the blast was, you know.
Yeah.
But the majority of people won't be. The majority of people will be 40 miles to 400 miles downwind. Okay?
Right. And now if you go down 400 miles, even in a slice of pie, it's still going to be dispersing quite rapidly, too. I mean, the radiation is there, but the concentration is dropping.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And also, that fallout took more time to get to you 400 miles downwind, unless we got a hurricane going on. And that was more time for the fallout to lose its intensity.
Yeah.
Another plus.
What if we had a situation like Santa Ana winds going on, and we had one in L.A., and we got these 40-mile-an-hour winds blowing all over the place? That would, in a dispersion level, do a pretty fine job of getting it thinned out pretty good. But we still have a 48-hour, even with light dispersion, I would imagine we still have a 48-hour window to really be careful, wouldn't we? Even because in Santa Ana winds would be blowing all over the place. You know, I mean,
yeah,
one direction.
No, that would be tough.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we can't count on and rely on the government to be able to tell you what areas are safe and aren't safe. Now here's what I mean. They probably won't know right away.
No, I mean, if we're like George Bush when 9/11 happened, he's sitting in a classroom for another half an hour.
Yeah, well, they might not know.
Yeah.
And the other part of the problem is that when they do know, you may not have any electricity running any TVs or radios to let people know.
Right, so I think it's really important to have a survival radio going for some, you know, civil... I don't know, whatever happened to the civil channels we used to have, you know, the civil defense channels we used to have on the radios? When I was a kid, we always had those tests once a week, you know?
Well, the tests are still going on,
yeah.
But, you know, the EMP is going to affect, plus the destruction, you're going to be looking at a lot of the utilities being down.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't know if the radio station has got its own generator, that it's going to be up and running, and then the radio station, if it is up and running, they have to get the information from the government first, telling them what to tell the people, and then we got a problem on the receiving end. Do the people have a radio so that they can hear the one station that's running, that's been told by the government what people in different areas need to do, whether they need to stay home, you're okay, or whether they need to evacuate, and if so, in what direction? And anyways, the bottom line to all of that is that that's an infrastructure your family's survival doesn't need to rely on. You need to have your own radiological instrument so that you can confirm where you're standing, whether it's good to stay or you need to go.
And we have that because we sell that for you. That's one of the most amazing things on the planet, right? The little nuke alert.
Yeah, it is.
It's an amazing thing. I got one glued on my wall in the house here. If something happens, it's glued on the wall. I mean, it tells me, you know, what's going on in the house. I one on the keychain, stick one on your wall. They're so inexpensive, you know. So tell
yeah,
us
and
about
what,
the nuke alert. I mean, that's the most brilliant thing I've seen anybody come up with, you know.
Yeah, we spent... you know, we made a lot of money from 9/11, and I took all of those funds, and I'd gotten a call by a fellow that had some patents to his credit, and he told me that he'd been working on something for the medical community, but it was too big for them, what they wanted, and he felt that with more R&D that he could make a small portable device. And I told him what I wanted. I wanted a keychain attachable device, KISS principle device, that you know would run forever, and it would tell people about dangerous levels of radiation. And I worked with him for 16 months and $250,000 to bring to market the Nuke Alert. And we've since gotten a patent on it. And he has also since turned into our manufacturer of it. So we got tremendous quality control.
Yeah.
And we're the only source for it. And we now have the DOD buying it. It's going on Army bases.
Wow, that's good. They buy in quite
a bit. But people need to know. And I'll tell you, the majority of our customers that have the Nuke Alert, when something nuclear happens, the way they're going to be served by the Nuke Alert is by it reassuring them that where they are is okay. Because most people will be okay right where they are, but nobody's going to know it. Everybody's going to be in a panic and having a stroke and a heart attack, and everybody's going to be jumping on the demolition derby that was the interstate highway 10 minutes earlier, and they don't need to.
I know, and they're so inexpensive. What's the retail price on those things? Like, what, $170 or something?
They're $160 if you buy one, and if you buy two or more at the same time, they're $145 each. And it's like being the only guy with a flashlight in the middle of a blackout.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, and both of us sell you know, Geiger counters and the surplus ones, and even the surplus Geiger counters cost a lot more money, and you can't carry those things around. They're too damn big, you know?
Yeah. Now, a word on the surplus meters is that the if you have one, a civil defense meter, one of the yellow ones, that's great, but make sure that you have had it recently calibrated and certified, and you should have it done every 3 or 4 years. You should not rely on them until you have had it calibrated.
I agree.
And we do that, and everything.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we do that at our lab, and it's absolutely essential that you have that done to it. It's very inexpensive.
What do
you know, you're talking
to calibrate one of those CDC 700s or whatever. What do you charge?
You're $68 for the CDV 700s. Those are the Geiger counter ones.
Yeah.
And for the survey meters, you're $78. That includes shipping back to you. If we get a unit and it needs any kind of repair work, if it's something we can do quick and easy, we'll just do it. If it's something more than that, we'll give you a quote and tell you what's going on. Now, we have calibrated literally thousands of civil defense meters, and we have never, ever found a single unit that did not need to be calibrated.
I agree. I don't calibrate them, but, you know, I've had them here, and I know they're not working right. You know, you can tell. Yeah.
Yeah, well, send it in, get it calibrated. Now you know it's good. If all it's doing is sitting on a shelf waiting for a disaster, it's going to be good for 3 to 4 years just sitting there. If it's bouncing around in the trunk of your car in a bug out bag, though, you're going to have to get it recalibrated more frequently. Now, this is true for even the most modern, most expensive equipment today. In nuclear power plants, they get them recalibrated every 6 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, because they're using them and banging them around every day. So this is normal.
The survey meters don't have the sensitivity of the Geiger counters. I've seen that. Are the survey meters sensitive enough for fallout readings, accurate fallout readings?
They are. What happens is that the Geiger counter is a very sensitive instrument. It will measure background radiation. In other words, when you get it and turn it on, it'll be clicking right there from natural background radiation, which is normal and around us all the time. It will read up to about 50 MR, okay, millirentgen.
Right.
Now, the survey meter starts at 100 millirentgen and goes all the way up to 500 rentgen. Now, to put this into perspective, 500 rentgen, if you were exposed to that for an hour, that's a lethal dose.
Right, exactly.
Okay? So it's going to tell you when it's 5 rentgen or 10 or 15, and you don't want to accumulate, 10 hours at 50 rentgen, because that would be a lethal dose again.
Right, because there is a cumulative factor in radiation poisoning to the body. You could walk up to 500 for 10 seconds and walk away and maybe survive. But if you stay there for a few minutes, you're going to be a dead puppy, right?
Well, at 500 rentgen, if you stayed there an hour, you just got a dose of 500 rads.
Right.
And that's like the 50% cutoff. In other words, if 100 people did that, 50 are dead, and the other 50 wish they were.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So what the whole trick with radiation is, it's called ELARA, and it's as low as reasonably achievable. In other words, you just want to minimize it and keep it as low as you can. And if you do get radiation, or you have to, you want to spread it out over time. And I'll give you a for instance. If you got a half hour's worth of sun every day for a year, that would probably be a healthy thing.
Right.
Okay? But if you got a year's worth of sun in 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, around the clock, it would kill you.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Okay. It's the same thing with the radiation.
Good point.
You could get a 500 rad dose, but if you spread it out over a whole year, you would survive it.
Yeah.
Because your body had time to make the repairs. Now, the odds of you getting cancer later in your lifetime have probably gone up, 0.2 or 0.5%.
Yeah.
But you would have had survived it. So when we talk about protecting ourselves from radiation in our shelter or if you're exposed to it, is that you want to make it as brief as possible, and you want to keep space. You want to have distance from it, And if you are exposed to it, you want to have shielding between you and the radiation. And what the shielding does, it absorbs the gamma rays, which are very similar to X-rays. And the more stuff you got stacked up between you and the outside of the house, where the radioactive fallout is falling on the ground like dust, the more you have, the more radiation will be absorbed and not reach you behind your water barrels or your stored up food or your file cabinets or your boxes full of books or whatever it is. Anything that has weight will absorb the radiation.
Yeah, so this is nice. If you did make a homemade shelter, you could and had to use it. It'd be nice to have a Nuclearc just to test it. Now, I know this thing, the Nuclearc's like let little beeps out. That's the way the warning system is, little beeps, right?
Yeah, it's very simple. There's a chart on the back, and we explain it on the website. And what it does is it chirps. And, for instance, it goes all the way up to 10. If it's at the 3 chirp level, it'll chirp 3 times in a row. It'll chirp, 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 very easy to count, and then in about 20 seconds, it'll repeat again. So it's very easy to count. It's not going to scare the kids. It's not a whooping siren or something.
What does and, chirps mean? What level of radiation is 3?
Oh, let me grab mine real quick so I don't tell you wrong. let me put my glasses on here, too. You're looking at 0.4 Rentgen per hour, and you could stay there in that level of radiation, and this is on the chart, too, on the back,
right,
for 10 and a half days. And if you did that, in other words, you're getting that rate of exposure, and if you did it for 10 and a half days, you would have accumulated a total dose of 100 rad. And let me explain why we show it that way. 500 rad is lethal. 100 rad is where half of the population, it's the 50% mark again,
right,
half of the population would begin to feel the first effects of radiation sickness.
Right.
And this is nausea and feeling bad, et cetera, throwing up, that sort of thing. Now, if you don't exceed that and you're a normally healthy person, you have 100% chance of survival.
Right.
In other words, it's 100% survivable. If you don't exceed that, you're not going to have any problems. So that's why we show it on the Nuclearc. And at the low end, on the single chirp level, you could stay there for over 41 days. And then every chirp increase is a doubling of the radiation and a cutting in half of the safe time that you can stay there.
So,
it's very simple. So here's all you got to remember. If the Nuclearc goes to chirping, get thee someplace where it will chirp less.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you have to remember. And if you're doing that, you're getting yourself into a safer place. And see, even if the government comes out and says, hey, everybody north of the interstate head this way, and everybody south head, even if you're in that exodus directed by the government, if you have a Nuclearc, you can confirm that you're not going into harm's way, that you're going someplace safer.
Because
who knows?
If it starts increasing in frequency, you're going the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? The wind may change. You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of confusion, a lot of panic, and you need to know what it's doing for your family where you're standing right there. And that's what we're doing with the Nuclearc.
Yeah, no, I think it's a brilliant product. We don't sell a whole lot of them, but we sell a few. And the more we talk about them, of course, this is one product that I really would like to sell a lot more of. But people, like, they are lackadaisical, you know, but hopefully tonight having you on the show, it'll wake up, this thing will be archived, people will listen to it. Because let's say that we don't have a bomb go off, let's just say we have a terrorist gets to one of these nuclear reactors where we make electricity. Or the electricity, or like Three Mile Island, it just naturally implodes on itself. I mean, people around Three Mile Island didn't know what to do. If they'd had these Nuclearcs, it tells them. Because I know there had to be a danger zone in certain areas when one of these things, you know, self-immolates, especially Chernobyl.
No, that's true, and it's curious. You're mentioning the problems with the nuclear power plants. The is it I can't remember the name, Palo Alto, or I don't remember the name of it. The one in Arizona, it's a real big one.
Okay.
They locked that down today.
Today?
Because they had a worker, contract worker, show up at the gate, and they searched his vehicle and found an explosive device.
Okay, I heard about that. I didn't know where that was. Now, that would be nice to be, if you're in Arizona and that happened, it would be nice to have a nuke alert, I would think.
Well, absolutely. And, if there's any kind of explosion or something that happens upwind of you, you know, you need to go ahead and take your potassium iodide right then. You know you're going to have your bases covered as far as thyroid protection for the next 24 hours while you sort out fact from fiction.
Right.
And if it turns out that it wasn't a nuclear problem, then you simply discontinue taking it.
Yeah.
But between that and the nuke alert or some other device like that, I mean, that's what people need. But Dr. Bell, I'd like to, you know, really congratulate you on what you're doing at your website, because more important than any of the products we sell is information.
Yeah.
People need to know the good news that this stuff truly is survivable, because all these solutions we're talking about, they don't get through to people until people understand that it's not futile to prepare.
No, it's not, and unfortunately, I really feel with what's going on right now, we really need to do that. You know, just from the local, you know, I'm only 12 miles away from San Onofre down here, and if something went off down there and the wind was blowing the wrong way, I'm glad I got a nuclear, you know, because I need to have that, you know?
No, absolutely, and in most cases, the people that have them, what it's going to do is allow them not to join the panic.
Yeah.
And the panic is going to kill a lot of people. People are going to go nuts because they don't understand radiation. They feel that if anything nuclear happens, everybody's going to die, or if you don't, it'll be so bad you wish you had, and people are going to go nuts. And you need to avoid that herd of panicked people, that stampede. You don't need to be in that.
Yeah.
And again, Dr. Bell, one of the greatest things that you're doing is on your website, people can avail themselves of our good news article, the two-page article, which leads directly into pointing people to the other document that you have over there, our free 8-page, what to do if a nuclear disaster is imminent.
On there, and then they can go to your website for information, too. Why don't you give your website out? It's on the front of BBS Radio, but... You know, put it out anyway, because we got people listening on the radio that don't have computers.
So
they can go to yours too, you know?
Yeah, and let me say first, for anybody that doesn't have a computer, you pay taxes, you own the computer at the public library, go to it and print these two things out. And our website for it is www.ki4u.com, and it's the letter K, the letter I, the numeral 4, and the letter U.com. And right in the center of the first page that comes up will be a link to the good news about nuclear destruction. And right under that is a link to the free 8-page report, what to do if a nuclear disaster is imminent. And the thing that motivates us here is that millions of fellow Americans and families are at risk of perishing needlessly for lack of knowledge. And this is so tragic. And this is stuff that was taught back in grade school back in the 50s and 60s. And there's just no sense at all that people should be at this level of risk for no good reason. So get this information, read it, make copies of it. I send this to everybody, you know, my siblings and everything. I mean, when I first came out with it a couple years ago, I just put a post-it note on it, and all it said was, I hope we never need this information, but just in case, keep it handy, love, Shane. And you know what? My six brothers and sisters, you know, they didn't buy all this stuff prior to 9/11. You know, they thought I was a nutcase, you know?
Yeah.
but my brothers and sisters, I got a positive response from all of them. You know, I didn't shove it down their throat. I didn't try to sell them on it, but they kept it. They read it and they understand what to do if, heaven forbid, any of this stuff should happen. I mean, nobody wants to think about this stuff. I mean, who wants to think
this stuff?
You know, it's human nature. I mean, you know, this. You know, nobody wants to think about it, but this is insurance.
Yeah.
You know,
and this is, you know, I don't want to scare people with this information, but, you know, I in a very slow, conservative way, I'm getting more forceful with it. So intuitively, it's like you say, it's not whether it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. And there's no reason, you know, that we can't save lives and make people feel a lot safer by getting this information out and getting these little keychains. I mean, this is a cool little thing. People pay $160-$170 for keychains with all kinds of other weird things on them. Why not have something that's functional? And it's a nice looking unit too, you know.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, this is really neat. When people get into, for instance, the information that we're telling them about, the article and the guide, there is a ton of good news there. You're going to find out that you don't have to be in fear of this stuff. This stuff really is survivable if you know what to do. The odds of you being at ground zero are next to nothing. I mean, the biggest surprise you're going to have when this stuff happens is that you're still here.
Yeah.
And if you want to stay here and keep your family safe, there's a few things that you need to do. And one other thing I should say too, a lot of the preparations that we talk about in the what to do if a nuclear disaster is imminent is going to serve you for any kind of disaster.
Yeah.
Because the surviving the nuke part is easy. What you have to deal with then is the disruption of services afterwards.
Exactly. Like you should have some water and stuff around.
Food, yeah. Water, medical, security, communications. You need to have this stuff. And see, that'll serve you. I mean, we could have a pandemic. We could have an avian flu thing where everybody that's going to survive it is going to have to be able to self-quarantine their family away from the general population for 3 to 6 months while the die-off happens.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people can do that? And the neat thing about stocking food and these different things is if you see the way food prices are going, if you stock up food today, typically you're going to go to the Costco or the Sam's and buy in quantity and get a good wholesale price to start with, and you're going to save money. And heaven forbid, if nothing bad ever happens, you can always eat it.
Yeah, it's true.
And you know what? It might be a situation where one of the two, you know, is somebody in your family loses their job. Wouldn't it be great while you're looking for a new job that at least you didn't have to worry about how you're going to feed yourself because you had 6 months of food?
Yeah, it's true. I agree.
Or 3 months or whatever. And it's really important that we do these things. And it used to be the norm back in our grandparents' day. 90% of the country was rural. They weren't all farmers, but they were close to it. And most people had, you know, a pantry that was 6 or 8 months worth to hold them over till the next harvest season next fall.
Yeah, I remember that. I lived on a farm for a while. I remember that very well, the canning situation and the underground in the old tornado shelters where they used to put all the canned goods stuff for survival.
The root cellar, yeah.
Root cellar, exactly. Yeah, you don't see those anymore. And these crowds, these people don't even have anything in their cupboards, practically, you know.
And you don't. And the thing is, too, that there's a much, much smaller percentage of our population that is made up of the self-reliant, high morals of our grandparents' generation.
Yeah.
And you know, we could have economic problems come along that you're having to dig into your food for also. And economic problems are, I mean, that's a whole other program we could do. There's a lot of reasons to go ahead and, you know, stock up on stuff that your family always uses all the time anyways, and to have bought it cheaper, to buy it in larger quantities. And, you know, I mean, we got tornadoes and hurricanes and earthquakes and, you know, hopefully not asteroids, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Anyway.
You know, I mean, it's so prudent. You know, I mean, we have medical insurance and we have fire insurance and life insurance, all this other stuff. I mean, there's no more better insurance than
$50 for a nuclear. That's a lot cheaper than any insurance policy on the planet, you know. And you know what? If you're traveling, you never know what's going on. Maybe a truck, you know, they're hauling radioactive waste. It turns over on the freeway, or a train. They're going to be putting it over here in Nevada pretty soon. They're going to be shipments. There's lots of nuclear shipments going on right now as we speak, because I saw a program on it the other day, which was fascinating, on the History Channel. It's amazing. You know, we do have a lot of chemical spills, and it's just nice to have, you're going down the road, you're on a road trip, you're in another state where you don't live, and you got one of these things on your keychain. I think it's very handy just to have that, you know, extra realm of safety, my personal
opinion. No, it is. It is. And you know what? Prior to Y2K, people that were making these kinds of preparations were wacky, thought of as wacky camouflage survivalists, okay?
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? Since you know, I was the black sheep of the family until 9/11 happened. Then all of a sudden, overnight, I'm brilliant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. Well, I've been down that road in my field too. I know.
But you know what? Back then, if you had a generator at your house, you were kind of the wacky survivalist guy.
Yeah.
But you know what? But nowadays, it's chic. Nowadays, especially after Katrina, it is chic to have a generator at your house.
I've had one for 5 years out there. The motor's been run about an hour. I started once a year, whether it needs it or not, to make sure it works. We're out of time. Let's go ahead and give us your website and maybe an 800 number or something if you want, and then we got to bail out because next show's coming on. It was sure great having you on there, Shane. I really, really glad to get you on my program. We've been doing business for a long time, and I know we'll have you on another show, and we'll take it to another level next time around, you know?
I've enjoyed it, and maybe we'll take questions and stuff from people, too. I'd love to do it anytime you want, Fred.
Yeah.
The website's www.ki4u.com, and the 4 is the numeral 4. And again, if you don't have internet, go to your local library. You're paying for it, whether you use it or not.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Well, that was Shane Connor, a friend of mine. He works with all the government agencies. We always get good G2 out of him, intelligence out of him on what's really going on. I know the Bush camp doesn't like what we do because they think they're taking care of us, but they're really not. We got to take care of ourselves. That's how it works. So you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, November 2nd, 2007. Tomorrow night we'll have some pre-recorded stuff from the New York show, as I promised. Once again, thank you very much, Shane, for coming on. And I gotta get myself out of here. I'm going to get my hydroplane started, and I'm going to go out there on the Gulf and do some boating with Shane.
Sounds great, Fred.
I'll talk to you guys in a bit. And this is the end of the evening for us. And boy, we had fun tonight. So you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Until next week, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.